Okay, I think on the other side of the tape, the last comment I made was this issue of proaction versus reaction. And this whole planning process was initiated at Barrington, by Barrington leaders, and we, as consultants, strongly supported it. But the whole idea was to be proactive, to anticipate trends, and to be able to manage those trends in a manner that was in harmony with Barrington area goals and objectives and countryside living environment. But at times, to be honest, the Barrington area or individual villages or citizen organizations have been reactive. In other words, they're sort of not excited until somebody poses a threat. And then there's a reaction. And oftentimes, by the time that threat is posed, the outcome is pretty well defined. You end up perhaps losing. There are some examples here, but among the examples, perhaps is that the Barrington area and villages, particularly Barrington Hills and South Barrington, I'm talking about the south end of the Barrington area now, could have been more proactive in annexing property and being more reasonable about land uses and development densities or lot sizes, etc., and annexed the property and had it within their control. Not being proactive resulted in, particularly Hoffman Estates, jumping across the expressway, has obviously produced a lot of development, but it hasn't benefited the Barrington area from a tax base perspective. It has generated a lot of traffic in the Barrington area, and it also establishes a precedent for other properties that may be within Barrington area villages, but are right across the street, and those standards may have to be now bent a bit in order to avoid further annexation by another village like Hoffman Estates. So, I come back to that importance of being proactive, and that's really what the Barrington Area Council of Government was created to do, not to just to react and fight certain zoning cases, but to be proactive and to, in several cases, to encourage its municipalities to annex land, which it might not otherwise have wanted to do. Now, I want to come back quickly to this matter of proactive, because we made some other recommendations other than BADC and BACOP. We recommended Citizens for Conservation. That's being proactive. And I think that has paid off. We recommended a non-profit or limited profit land bank corporation. Cyril Wagner particularly was interested in that and tried to organize it and get it funded, but was unsuccessful in getting enough financial support to really become serious. But the whole idea of a land bank nonprofit or limited profit corporation would be to acquire properties that we knew might be a threat. At the time, we were, I think, particularly interested in properties along at the intersection of 59 and 22, north of the village of Barrington, which seemed to be sort of, you know, on the tipping edge of the real estate market, and where local officials had good relationships with property owners, etc. Looking at from the property owner's point of view, you know, want to at least get, if not the top dollar, you want to get something that's reasonable. So wouldn't it have been nice if a land bank corporation with local interests at stake were to acquire that property and then sell it with certain covenants or limitations on the type of development to a developer who would be for profit. And we could probably find those. So those two were proactive recommendations, one of which was a disappointment that it didn't get off the ground. The other, I think, I see you nodding your head, you agree, was a big step forward.
I think the BAPUG plan and the BAPUG organization have relevance to the area today?
Well, absolutely. First of all, planning is an ongoing process. And if it isn't planning for the future of farmland, which will someday perhaps be developed for one reason or another, it will end up being planning for redevelopment. So that planning is indeed an important process. It's ongoing. One of the books that I love to quote is Alan Toffler's book, Future Shock, in which he makes the point, managing change is the biggest challenge to the future of the world, because change is occurring at an ever-increasing, with an ever-increasing rapidity. And we see that in not just in the city of Chicago, but in one suburb after another, where a new research park was built in downtown, started to be built in downtown Evanston, and 30 years later, the initial building has been torn down and replaced by a multifamily residential building. There is constant turnover. And one of the things that the Burlington area needs to plan for even now, since you mentioned, what was that retail development, I think it's Arboretum? I can guarantee you that if not now, in the near future, that developer will be thinking about how can I increase the density of this development? How can I add more retail to it? How can I do this? That's the nature of the way things work. And so managing change, and change will come, it's inevitable throughout our lives, is in effect the broad responsibility of BAPUG. And it's a never-ending process. And there will be ways in which we're talking about changing governmental services. It's not just land use. It's not just development and redevelopment of property. Well, manage and change. I understand there's a 350-acre farm in South Barrington that is now part of the Forest Preserve. Well, I'm not sure we would have anticipated that at some point in the past. But it's turned out to the benefit of those who support equestrian heritage in Barrington Hills. But I suspect there are some nearby property owners who are not altogether happy with it, because maybe, you know, the equestrians will be cutting across their property, as was the case years ago when we prepared the plan for Barrington Hills. We knew that. But these things need to be anticipated. And there are ways to minimize the impact, if not completely avoid it, if reasonable people meet and arrive at reasonable terms. And this can also be the case with governmental services. School consolidation between elementary and high school districts is going to unit districts is still, I think, an inevitable transition, hard for a lot of local jurisdictions to decide on, but probably will be inevitable over time. Certainly, if not the merging of the districts, the coordination of the curriculum, things like that. We were talking about water resources earlier. water resources are fundamental to the Burlington area. And in these plans, we took into account, as you alluded to earlier, the facilities planning area. We took into account the recharge of groundwater aquifers, which not only serve the Burlington area, but serve a large portion of the region as a whole. This is a regional issue, it's not just a local Burlington issue. So one has to plan, one has to have alliances with regional agencies and organizations, maybe state agencies and organizations. These are all part of the planning process. It took maybe 20 years for Northfield and the Illinois Department of Transportation to agree on the widening of Willow Road. Well, ultimately there had to be some kind of mutual agreement. You can look at your roadways in the Burlington area, for example, and you should be planning now for the protection of the amenity of those roadway corridors. I'll say more about that later. So there is indeed, and then there's the fiscal aspect and the impact on taxpayers, and that's another subject that BACOG can be giving consideration to, as well as you indicated earlier, coordinating local codes and ordinances and impact fees so that one community isn't competing against another community because it has a higher or lower impact fee. That's not all a zoning issue. It's an overall governance issue.
I'd like to mention that Tesco Associates is a nationally recognized planning firm, highly respected planning firm, and as its founder and chief planner for many years, you have a profound knowledge about planning as a profession, and you have observed the planning profession, you know, over several decades, let's say. There's a cyclical nature to planning, where something, you know, particular philosophy of planning can be in vogue for a while, for a decade, that can change and merge and transform into another philosophy, whether it's green infrastructure or it's environmentally focused, like the BACOG plan is environmentally focused, cluster housing and planned unit developments and so on. Do you think that, stepping back to the BACOG plan again, do you think that the BACOG plan, its tenets on managing development according to environmental resources available to support it, is that still a valid model? And is it still a valid model for our area? Is it still a valid model for other areas of the country and the state?
Absolutely, it's an excellent model. And I can tell you this, when we started this program in 1965, there were really only two other models that we could identify in the entire United States that were dealing with areas like this and with issues like this. One was outside Baltimore and the other was outside Philadelphia. Neither of which, I'm aware, has achieved the success of the Burlington area. The Burlington area is a model not only in terms of growth management, but in terms of governance as well. And more can be accomplished in both. We have from the outset, by the way, since you mentioned these terms, we have from the outset supported cluster development and plan development. And I would suspect that every municipality in the BACOG area probably provides for those alternatives. But in any case, let me give you a number of examples of how the Burlington area, BACOG, Burlington area in general, because it's not just BACOG, as important as it is, it's these other organizations as well, have become models, not only in this region, but throughout the country. I first mentioned that John Hemel, when he moved to Wayne, took the BACOG and particularly the Barrington Hills concept to Wayne, which is also an equestrian community of sorts. And so it's a model locally. Kane County, which in the 1970s and 80s was experiencing a lot of development that had jumped the Fox River. Kane County came to Tesk Associates and asked us for a variety of recommendations. And we outlined a hierarchy of human settlement structures that we had begun to consider in the BACOG planning, although they may not be evidenced in the BACOG area, but it was the BACOG planning process that called all this to our attention. The idea of going from a farm to a farm cluster to a hamlet to a village to a town, and all these terms are used loosely, but all of them have to do with a hierarchy of scale, density, services provided, governance. And you can think of these rural and semi-rural areas as developing in that way if you choose to. Kane County has built that into their plan. But a lot of those ideas came out of the Barrington area work, and if not evidence in the Barrington area itself, were a part of the thought process at the time. And where we really used those ideas to advantage was in Loudoun County, Maryland. Loudoun County, Virginia, which was the area just to the west of Dulles International Airport. And with flat farmland, with the Blue Ridge Mountains, with and every kind of environment you can imagine, equestrian communities, 300-year-old historic communities, and all of this demanded some kind of protection. We developed hillside zoning ordinances there, and we created roadside zoning ordinances for some of this, what I call the scenic roads. Well, this came out of the Barrington area experience. If you will look at, I can't recall which report it's in, maybe it was in the Barrington area report, and maybe it was in one of the other villages. But we began to investigate the characteristic of roads and was important to the countryside or rural character of a roadway. Because a roadway is an experience. It's not just a means by which you get from here to there. It's an experience. And we began to articulate ways in which these scenic roadways and local roadways in the Barrington area could be maintained. Now, Kane County hired us, Tesk Associates, to do a study of a complete north-south rural road, which ultimately, like 10 years into the future, not 50 years, would become the western edge of the city of Geneva and other urban development, and how to utilize that road as a dividing line between urban and non-urban land use and development, and how to maintain the rural character, the scenic character of that roadway. So, again, the Barrington area set the tone for that. Among the most important things that the Barrington area generated was precedents for intergovernmental agreements. We covered many of them. But certainly other areas of the Chicago region have looked at the Barrington area as being a pioneer in that process. We strongly recommended in the Barrington area, for the first time, the framework of a land use guidance system. That term became subsequent years land use management. But the whole idea is that there are a variety of techniques available to municipalities and to others to guide land use, and they are not all regulatory, doesn't rely only on zoning. And too many communities rely only on zoning as their only tool. That plus a lawsuit if things don't go well, which is like flipping a coin as to what the outcome might be these days. But the land use guidance is putting to use all of the reactive and proactive assets available to a municipality or to an area to accomplish its planning objectives. Well, that land use guidance system that we outlined for the Barrington area has become a model for land use management systems throughout the country. And in fact, we've taught that. I've taught it. I mean, we started out back in the BACOG days with seminars, well, not seminars, courses at Harper College. I've taught this at Northeastern Illinois University. I was teaching this at seminars at the University of Wisconsin. The Metropolitan Planning Council, in its smart growth efforts here a few years ago, was utilizing some of these ideas. And then you had this training session in 2001, sponsored by BACOG. Well, maybe it's time to start over again. Maybe it's time to get Harper College involved again. Maybe it's time to institutionalize this process of education and training, because this was very much an outgrowth of and a reverse an ingredient to heightening awareness and training of the leaders of the Barrington area at all levels. And would be, I think, worthy of exercising again. And don't forget, people like Bill Braithwaite and others have been involved in this process from the attorney side. So a lot of land use oriented legislation has come out of this. In fact, I'm not sure the extent to which it has been taken advantage of, because I don't think any funding was made available to assist municipalities. But the state legislature in Illinois adopted legislation providing for land resource management plans. Those were plans that were patterned after the BACOG plan, which was basically a resource-based plan, not necessarily an urban development plan. In other words, the driving force would be how to preserve and maintain, and what's the sustainable, that's the term, sustainable environments, okay? But accommodate urban growth and development, as opposed to the other way around. Most of the 701 plans that were prepared in the 60s and 70s that I mentioned earlier were plans prepared to recommend the growth and how it would occur of urban development, gave little or no attention to the resources or to the rural areas. And as I stated in a number of talks that I've given, remember, these rural areas, those are communities too. Those people probably have a small settlement or a village in which they gather from time to time, and local decisions are made. They have 4-H clubs. They have all these other kinds of social networks. They know everybody's business. One farmer helps another farmer. These are communities. So when you decide to build a large scale development out there in the hinterland, even if it's a planned unit development for a new community utilizing the best of new planning techniques, you are invading an established community. And that's no different than trying to put a 90-story building in the center of a lower income community in the city of Chicago that, despite its adversity and everything else, is in fact still a community itself. That's one reason why the Crosstown Expressway was never built. was because people thought it would break up these communities on the west side of Chicago. So we come back to, you know, how to look at communities in general and the value of Baycog. And the value of Baycog is that it has taken an area greater than any one village, or an area greater than any one mindset. And in effect, branded it as a larger community with neighborhoods. And each neighborhood being different, but supporting the other neighborhoods. Let's see, one other, there's yet another way in which Baycog has extended its influence nationally. Remember I mentioned that we produced this report on the costs and revenues of land use alternatives, or the fiscal impact? You produce what's called the fiscal impact analysis technique. Well, trust me, that became a major consulting service at Barton Ash & Associates back in the 1970s, the late 1960s and 1970s, when not only community after community was asking Barton Ash & Associates to take these fiscal impact studies, but developers who were making proposals for development would not even wait to be asked. They would go in with a fiscal impact analysis of their development to prove that it would be beneficial. So it became, you know, just a part of the development review process and the land use management process. Well, little did we know at the time that Rutgers University was doing the same thing out east in New Jersey. The Center for Urban Policy Research at Rutgers University was doing the same thing, offering consulting assistance to communities with fiscal impact analyses. And we became aware of each other. Obviously, we were small scale, they were big scale. And they took us, Barton Ash & Associates at the time, Tesk Associates does this also subsequently, but at the time, they asked Barton Ash & Associates to be co-authors, although our role was less than theirs, co-authors in the production of the Fiscal Impact Handbook, the first How to Do It book in the nation on this subject. And the reason, one of the reasons, why our efforts were so compatible was that the taxation structure of New Jersey is very similar to the taxation structure of Illinois, in placing a great deal of emphasis on property taxes. So we were in effect developing the same techniques independent of each other. And so, you know, here we are. We're part of this impact handbook. Well, Barrington area. So you never know, going back to Baycog, you never know what the next thing that Baycog does, and you're in a lot of research now on water quality, and I bet there aren't any, I don't know how many other communities in the area, in the region are doing that, but one of the, you know, really important things is you're developing techniques, you're developing a database, you're developing information that not only aids and benefits the planning of the Barrington area, but it forms a precedent or a model for what other municipalities could be doing. And this goes back, in the Barrington area, and the Baycog and BADC, they have to do this kind of thing because you're in four counties. You can't be at the corner of four counties. You know, you're really away from the centerpiece of decision making. So you can't rely on any one of those counties to do the work for you. Uh, So keep up the good work.
Well, we might want to wrap up this interview. We have a very full history of the Barrington Area Council of Governments. You've covered so much of it. You were involved in so much of it from the early days and also working with our municipalities after the very early days, working still with BACOG after the very early days, doing our comprehensive plan revisions and so on. We have done many of the intergovernmental agreements. We've done continuing environmental research. We've done, over the years, since BACOG was formed in 1970, we've done defenses of land use and fought the good fight with our local officials on developments that were inappropriate and so on. So there are all these things that BACOG has continued to be involved in.
Could I say one thing, since you mentioned?
Absolutely.
Defending?
Yes. Defending the plan.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, one of the real values of BACOG is, and I believe this to be true, although I'm not involved in all your current decision-making efforts, but in defending the Barrington area, this is true anywhere in the United States, that you have to go in well-prepared with facts and not emotion. And the general populace will show up at a public meeting and express a lot of emotion. But if you're going to get a decision in your favor from a court or from a higher jurisdiction like a county, you're going to have to go in with facts and a convincing argument. And that would not be possible without an organization like this.
Further remarks you'd like to add to the record?
You've exhausted my memory. I'm amazed that I recalled all of this after so many years. But obviously it was close to my heart at the time and still is. So.
Well, we'd like to thank you very, very much for taking your time to go through all this information with us. And we appreciate everything you did for the Barrington area in the early days. And I think we're going to thank you in advance for the workshop that you're going to be doing for in the future. So, thank you.
I think it's called storytelling.
Storytelling.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.